February 7th, 2007, meeting of the Senate's Public Safety Budget Division will come to order. We will be hearing some budget presentations from several of the departments that are under our jurisdiction, and I think we'll start today with the Department of Human Rights. Welcome, Commissioners.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Velma Corbell. I'm the Commissioner at the Department of Human Rights. Thank you very much for the opportunity to present our 08-09 budget request. With me today is our Deputy Commissioner, James Kirkpatrick. The mission of the Department of Human Rights, very simply stated, is to make Minnesota discrimination free. And we do that by embarking on work through our key programs and activities, enforcement, compliance, and education. In our compliance unit, we review and approve state contractor affirmative action plans. Just last year in FY06, we certified about 750 contractors. We currently have about 1,500 certified plans on file. We conducted 99 compliance reviews or audits, and the breakdown of that was about half of those were desk audits, approximately 30 of those were on-site audits, and 19 of those were construction audits. In our education unit, we provide education and outreach through a variety of resources. Some listed on the screen there, our Human Rights Day conference with an average attendance of about 600 people, an electronic newsletter with a circulation of approximately 3,000, community forums, community showcases for training, employers and business owners and citizenry, and through education partnerships with higher education and K-12 education. We also have have conducted a lot of outreach through public service announcement, newspaper columns, video documentaries, and through the state fair last year, we estimate around 18,000 to 20,000 people came through the Department of Human Rights booth. The statute that the department enforces is Chapter 363A of the Minnesota statute, and within the department we have current general fund appropriation of about $7 million, $6.98 million. We have about $300,000 of biennium in special revenue through either private grants, a Human Rights Day revenue, a litigation expense, and we have 45.1 full-time equivalent employees. The statute at a glance here on the dot matrix, 8 areas of protection and 13 protected classes down the left side of the matrix: race, color, creed, religion, national origin, sex, marital status, disability, public assistance, age, sexual orientation, familial status, and status in your membership or activity in a local human rights commission. Just a breakdown for your information, the enforcement activity by basis. As you can see from the slide, the disability area seems to be the largest basis on which discrimination charges are filed. But if you look at race and national origin together, you will see that race and national origin still lead disability and the other bases by a fair amount. And that has remained steady over the last several years. We do see disability climbing somewhat as the population ages, but really no, that has been pretty much static over the last several years. If we look at enforcement charges by area, just to give you an idea of the kind of work that we do, complaints are filed primarily in the employment area, and you can see the others, comparatively speaking, public services, housing, and public accommodations with respect to that. Deputy Commissioner Kirkpatrick and I are sharing the duty for the presentation today, so he's going to take over and tell you the specifics of the budget request.
Great. Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to bring up the first slide shows significantly that the majority of our allocations are going towards compensation, which is salaries and, of course, the benefit package. And then the second is rent. And in both of those categories, if you go through from this current year out, will increase. And we have less and less money to spend on our programs, the direct programs, and the support of those programs. Our current request, however, we're hoping to receive a 2% to help offset the expense due to compensation. We do expect over the next biennium some salary savings to assist in this. The big block that you see that's new is a management system that I'll discuss later, but it would also help us remain our efficiencies. Our major initiative is to replace our current database system with the case management system that we received back in March of 1994 through the legislature. The initiative, our current environment, our case management system, and access to our services are basically manual now, not very much automation. The current documents are not recoverable in case of a disaster. They are almost 100% paper, and should we have an issue with water or fire, we would lose all of that. Existing infrastructure is unable to take advantage of the current technologies and any future technologies that we see in the future. And last but not least, there's no redundancy in the current technology. What do we expect as an outcome? First of all, the stakeholders will have an improved access to department services regardless of their geographic location. State agencies and local governments will have 24/7 real-time access to department data, which is necessary for their activities. The department clientele will have a 24/7 real-time access to their case information and ability to submit pertinent documentation electronically. Data collection will be more comprehensive and will enable the department to target educational activities and to facilitate appropriate allocation of department resources. And then finally, documents will be stored electronically, which will allow easier document recovery. Subject to your questions, that concludes our briefing.
Madam Chair and committee members, one final budget pressure that we need to raise here today that is not in this initial request, which we just became aware of within the last week, is the transfer of some work that has previously been done by the State Attorney General's Office to the Department of Human Rights to the tune of about $100,000. And as I said, we only learned about this after the initial budget request went in to the Department of Finance, but that is something that we're going to have to find a way to mitigate that in some respects. And as you could tell from the presentation that Deputy Commissioner Kirkpatrick just did, there's a significant pressure to programs already with the compensation and rent, and to assume the responsibility for this new work coming from the Attorney General's office as a result of their restructuring is an added pressure to our budget. We'll answer any questions that you have.
Questions from the committee? I'm interested, Deputy Commissioner, in the case management system, the OET. And in your presentation, you said that most of your documents were now on paper and not electronic?
Yes, ma'am. We have files, some of which are up to 100 pounds, and it's all paper. And we don't have the technology to convert those to electronic, and that's one of the things we're seeking.
I'm fascinated by that. computers have been around for, we're talking decades here now. Why is it that that your department hasn't gotten the scanning capabilities and the other electronic capabilities that you need to put these things? A scanner's not that expensive. Hard drives are not that expensive. But tell us more about why this is taken until 2008 to do this.
Madam Chairman, the biggest issue is of course, money. When I first took over the deputy commissioners, we were in a position at doing that biennium of laying people off. And then the second biennium that I was present, we had severe budget cuts. And so we've not had the opportunity nor the economic environment to come forth with a request like this to try to catch up.
Okay. But this is a big request, and I'm thinking that there were, even before you, there should have been computerized files.
But may I, Madam Chair, try to respond to that? I'd like to tell this story because it makes us sound really, really pitiful, and I always hope that people are going to throw more money at us. Deputy Commissioner Kirkpatrick is talking about how the shape the department was in when we took over that department in 2003. And I remember coming to the legislature at that time and talking about the computer systems that we had on our desks in the department at the time were ones that were worse off than some of the ones the other departments were actually salvaging. And the computers that we brought into the department to replace the ones that didn't work were ones that another state agency were actually getting rid of so they could upgrade their technology. So we have been somewhat at a disadvantage with regards to technology. Part of that, I think, has been that there weren't people in the department who realized the benefit of upgrading to new technology. And so with Deputy Commissioner Kirkpatrick and some of the folks that he has in his on his staff, we have that expertise in the department now to also realize what we didn't know we didn't know.
Well, Deputy Commissioner, I'm glad you're there then. It will be, it'll be quite a change for you to get that into this century's technology. Questions? Senator Foley?
Madam Chair and Commissioner, have you got at least in the governor's program, dealt with the issue of cost of living increases?
Senator Foley,
Madam
Chair, I think that Deputy Commissioner Kirkpatrick did mention that there would be some pressure relieved in the budget if there were the 2% cost of living increase on top of the budget request. And because as you can see, as you watch the budget track out to 09, every year with the salary and benefit increases, the pressure is to really limit and decrease the amount of money we have remaining to be able to actually do the work that we need to do.
Madam Chair,
Senator Foley?
I note that on page 2 of your request there, there is a 2% compensation adjustment. Is that just a one-time deal, or is that a
curse? Madam Chair, that 2% is added on for each year. And so for the biennium, it would be 2% the first year, and then it's 2% of the 4% the second year. So it would include the natural increases.
Senator Foley?
Madam Chair, in the $1.45 million, replacing that, is that what you're talking about previously in the shortfall that you didn't have available at the time
Madam Chair,
you prepared
the Madam Chair, Senator Foley, the 1.4, yes, is the initial request to upgrade the technology, and you'll also note that there's $110,000 carried out through 09, which is the sustaining that new system.
Okay.
Other questions? If not, thank you very much for coming today and briefing us on your budget.
Thank you very much.
Stay warm up. Next department is the Post Board. Mr. Melton? Whenever you're ready, go right ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm being joined by Dan Boydum, our Executive Budget Officer from the Department of Public Safety. For the record, my name is Neil Melton, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training. We're the Post Boy. Last month, we were here, gave you the agency overview. Today, we're here to talk about the money. It should be brief and straightforward. It's all about the money. It's all about numbers. I like that. I was a math major when I was in college, and that's when 2 plus 2 equaled 4. In state government, still equals 4, but sometimes it's odd how we get there. So we will walk you through the handout you have in front of you. I believe it's 8 pages long. On the first page, again, we've discussed the agency overview in the past, so we'll move to the bottom. The Post Board is funded through a special revenue account from a surcharge on certain criminal and traffic offenses. The law directs that up to 39% of that fund is directed to the Post Board. 1% goes to DNR. 60% plus the remainder of Post's 39% goes to the general fund. As indicated on the bottom of page 1, the reimbursement that Post makes, $3,109,000, that's 73% of the budget, goes to local units of government to help them offset their training costs. The Post operating budget is currently $1.1 million, or 26% of our budget, and we have 12 full-time equivalent employees.
Mr. Melton, do you have a handout different from what's in the budget book, or are you talking about the budget book?
I'm talking about the budget book.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Go right ahead.
I think we're on the same page. Moving on to the, actually, that's page number 4, I believe. It's called the agency overview. Mm-hmm. Are we there, Senator?
I have it. Yep.
Thank you. Just moving down slightly from the top, it talks expenditures by fund. The direct appropriations, as I discussed, is that special revenue account. 06 was $3.9 million. 07 is $4.3 million. 4.2 in 08. 4.2 in 09. The next line underneath that is the miscellaneous special revenue, which reflects the receipts from the non-DUI-related driver's license reinstatement fund. Post was to get $185,000 in 06, $225,000 in FY07, $250,000 per year after that. Are we still?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Melton, back up to the first page, second page. You talk about the reimbursement to the local units of government of $3,109,000. Can you just give me an idea? Has that been going up, or where's that gone over the last 5 years? And the second question is, do you know what the cost of training for officers in the state of Minnesota, has that gone up or down or stayed kind of same over the years? Can you give me just a little idea?
Mr. Melton.
Madam Chair and Senator, the fund is actually the reimbursement to local units of government has been decreasing since 1989. We peaked in 1989, and then the subsequent 18 years, the reimbursement per year has gone down. It is our estimate, because we survey agencies every year, that the reimbursement we send back to local units of government reflects, on an average, 15% of what they actually spend in training. Now, some agencies use this reimbursement as their line item for local training. Others, it's just a small portion. But overall, about 15%.
Senator?
Just to follow up on that, Madam Chair. So the cost of training is where I'm going. I'm sure you talked to the sheriff and chief. The cost of training is going up, and the reimbursement rate seems to be going down. So it's an issue. It's certainly been an issue in my area. Basically, that's just kind of a comment. Maybe you can comment on how much the training has gone up. Just a figure.
There are 400, Madam Chair,
Mr. Melton.
Senator, there are 475 agencies in Minnesota. And yes, I hear from most of the chiefs and sheriffs and state agency directors that their costs certainly are going up, not only from salaries and fringe, but from driving to distances for regional training, equipment costs are up, cars are up, that sort of thing. So the cost of training is certainly increasing every year.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, if we're still on page four, my page four, we talked about that non-DUI-related reinstatement fee, which will be $250,000 a year into the next biennium. And below that are the expenditures by category. There's actually three items listed. One is total compensation, then other operating expenses. That's the post board's operating budget. Again, listed below that, the local assistance reflects the reimbursement to the local units of government on an annual reimbursement fee. At the bottom of that page shows the full-time equivalent positions, staffing at the post board, 12.2 FTE equivalents last biennium as well as into the next biennium. The next page is the change summary from the governor's recommendations, two of them. Number one is an operating cost increase of $5,000 in FY08, $10,000 in FY09, and a compensation adjustment of $18,000 in FY08 and $36,000 in FY09. And that was specifically
Chair,
because we have a number of costs that we have no control over.
Can you tell me what
Senator
page you're...
Page 5.
I didn't see the numbers that he was giving.
About five lines down where it says change items, yeah. Operating cost increases,
okay.
And then compensation adjustments. You see it?
I see them.
Okay.
I wasn't sure that he said those things.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. Mr. Melton, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we have the same pages.
I think we do.
Okay. I have a feeling I'm on the right pew in the wrong church here. I'm trying to figure out where we're going. So we are getting a change summary to help us maintain current staffing levels as well as being able to pay the bills for things we have no control over, the communications and rents and so forth, that we just cannot embrace or absorb ourselves as a small agency.
Mr. Melton, I'm having a really hard time hearing you. Can you pull that microphone ahead, please?
Better?
Yes, thank you.
I'm sorry, Senator.
No, some days it's my ears.
The last item on that page also reflects the special revenue. Again, the non-DUI-related driver's license reinstatement fees that were dedicated to the post-reimbursement funding, $250,000 a year for the next biennium. The next page. Operating cost increases, which goes back to the numbers I gave you on the previous page. The governor recommends $15,000 from that special revenue fund to pay for the operating costs. These are non-salary increases to the agency. The post board continues to experience increases for communication, supplies, equipment, all of the things necessary for us to continue licensing and maintaining services for law enforcement training. Certainly, small agencies like post have less flexibility involved. The recommendation will help us ensure that the agency can continue to provide these services. The recommendation will increase non-compensation operating funding by approximately 2.5% per year. This will also reduce transfers to the general fund of a similar amount. Moving on to the next page, mine is labeled compensation adjustment. Again, from the general fund, we'll show a decrease in 08 of $18,000, a decrease in 09 of $36,000. We will get that money through the special revenue account, and these do reflect salary dollars. The governor recommends additional funding for compensation-related costs associated with the delivery of the agency services, which represents an annual increase of 2% for personnel costs. And below that is is three paragraphs of pretty much boilerplate language on small agency issues.
Okay. Senator Moore.
Madam Chair, the 2% annual increase, is this new this year, or did you also get an increase in the last biennium?
Mr. Milton.
Madam Chair, Senator, this is new this year. We did not get an increase or a similar increase over the last biennium.
Madam Chair.
Senator Moore.
When was the last time you had an increase for personnel expenses, for salary adjustments?
Mr. Milton.
Madam Chair and Senator Moore, it had to be at least 3 bienniums ago because we've had a 20% staff reduction since 2001.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other questions? Senator Neville.
I'm sorry, Mr. Milton, I got here a little bit late, but all of your revenue comes from the criminal surcharge right now then? Is that correct? You don't get any general fund?
Mr. Milton?
Madam Chair and Senator Neville, as a rule, we are funded entirely from that special revenue account, although currently there is a general fund appropriation for the computer project?
No.
That was special revenue?
That was special revenue, too.
Then I stand corrected. We're all special revenue dollars.
Well, here's a statutory. My name is Dan Boydham. I'm with the Department of Public Safety, and I provide services for the Post Board. There is a statutory appropriation for non-DWI reinstatement fees that are to go for local reimbursement as well. But that's a small portion that's on there.
Well, where I'm trying to get to is,
Madam
Chair, is I'm trying to get a handle on these surcharges. Actually, Senator Foley has a bill here that I'm getting a lot of calls about already, too, about administrative fines in order to avoid the surcharges that, you know, going to regular court brings with it. And so my understanding is you get, what, 39% of the first 25 bucks? So that's about, you get 10 bucks.
$9.75.
The first $10 of the surcharge. And in terms of the overall, is the state collecting, are we seeing significant declines in what we're bringing in on the surcharges?
Mr. Milton.
Madam Chair, Senator Neville, it's a good question. Allow me to try to explain. When the surcharge came into effect in the mid-90s, it was $25 on certain criminal and traffic offenses. Post was authorized up to 39%, but the exact level was set by the legislature. We are now collecting about 25%, so we've never gotten the 39%. And every 1% reflects about $160,000, given the fund collects about $16 million. So now what was originally a $25 surcharge that was created by the chiefs and the sheriffs and MPPOA to try to provide a revenue source that was immune from the revenue ebbs and flows and say, we're going to be fairly consistent in having this money. Well, that surcharge is now $73. But Post still collects up to 39%, but really 26% of the original $25.
So Madam Chair, you're collecting enough just to meet your budgeted amount. Where's the rest going?
Everything goes to the general fund.
All in the general fund?
The general fund.
Mm-hmm.
No, 1% to go to DNR or someplace.
Yes, excuse me.
Game of Fish.
Okay. Thank you.
And Madam Chair, Senator Neville, Senator Foley, if you'd like me to, right at the end, I have a couple of comments about the administrative citations because I know that was one of your questions.
Yes, I mean, if we can, why don't you just go ahead.
Yeah, go right ahead now.
The issue of administrative citations has been in front of the Post Board for a few years, and the Post Board really struggles with it. At 1.2 years ago, we asked the Attorney General to render an opinion on administrative citations. The Attorney General's opinion, and the Board has agreed to abide by that, was that local units of government have total authority and total discretion to write administrative citations for ordinance-related offenses. Dogs, abandoned vehicles, anything that's on a local ordinance. But the Attorney General was clear in saying that if there is a parallel state statute, something in the traffic codes, in the 169 codes for speeding or semaphore violations or stop signs, that was not appropriate for administrative citation. So the Board at its last meeting said they will still abide by the Governor's ruling, although we have said, the Post Board said unanimously, we will defer to the judgment of local units of government because there are some that are writing these for citations for speed and stop signs. And the post board, although there's conflicting evidence, said leave it alone. Let the local units of government decide.
Is that clear?
Madam Chair and Mr. Melcher, there originally was a state auditor's finding on that and forwarded it that the police agencies had no authority to do that. And have you or were you made aware of that?
Mr. Melton.
Madam Chair and Senator Foley, I don't recall that specific auditor's findings, but we at the board had yet to see any definitive evidence that these tickets that were being written had diminished the fund. It's sort of like trying to prove a negative. We don't know what would not have been written in the past. Many officers say, well, I'm not writing citations because it's so expensive. The surcharge is so high. But I would write under the administrative citation. Others say the exact opposite. So the board just last month said, we will agree to stay the way it is right now.
Senator Foley?
Madam Chair and Ms. Pagliotta, it seems clear that, at least to me, that we've got a situation here where the more the local police and the sheriff's departments take money from that source, that the less likely there'll be a source to get it in the future, continue to draw that money out. Is that correct?
Mr. Melton.
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, that certainly is a possibility. Again, we don't have any empirical evidence to say that more or fewer citations are being written because of administrative citations, which would diminish the fund. And perhaps Mr. Boydham could talk about the expected revenues that come in through that special revenue.
Mr. Boydham?
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, the State Treasurer's Office actually collects that fee, and we are given estimates on it. And the estimates for this biennium are they're staying pretty level. And I'm
Madam Chair.
Mr. Boydham, we haven't had a state treasurer.
I don't really have any more information than that, I don't believe.
But, Madam Chair.
Finance Commission.
Yeah.
Senator Foley.
I'm not sure where you get the data that you're talking about, but the issue there is that the reporting is to the Supreme Court, and it isn't where the state court administration. And the problem that I'm facing is that the local units of government are not willing to provide what kinds of fees are raised and from whom. And I'm wondering if they filed anything with you that might have that information.
Mr. Melton, Mr. Boydham, whoever.
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, I do not have any more. I don't have any information or access to that.
Madam Chair?
Senator Foley?
Madam Chair and Mr. Boyd, what are you, is any money from these fees or administrative costs passing through you?
Madam Foley, I didn't understand the question.
Well, what I'm talking about, Madam Chair, deals with the idea that the money would come would be sent directly to the post board or to the Department of Public Safety or whatever agency, and they in turn would allocate it out for use of the various things that they do.
The surcharge, or what money
are
you talking about?
Well, the surcharge is an example of where that comes. The money goes to the state in part, and they reallocate it for something else.
Yes.
And that's what I'm trying to find out, whether anybody connected with the Department of Public Safety or the Post Board, are you receiving any money from local units of government?
Mr. Boydham.
Madam Chair, Senator Foley, the courts transmit those funds to the state treasurer, and on a monthly basis, they transfer to the post board that 39%, what they had collected in the previous month, the 39% of the $25. But the receipts themselves actually go directly to the state treasurer. They transfer the funds, the monthly receipts, to the post board. So the Department of Public Safety isn't involved with the collection of those. It's the state treasurer that actually collects those.
And, Madam Chair, if I can add one other comment.
Mr. Martin?
We don't have the money sitting in our office. At the end of the year, we survey all the local departments and ask them how what they spent in training. Then we divide that fund up, the $3.9 million, among the number of eligible officers. That is, officers that have worked for that agency for 8 months. So we come up with a number, somewhere in the neighborhood of 8,000 to 9,000 licensed officers. And that number is divided into that $3.9 million. And then each agency is given an electronic transfer of funds from the Department of Finance. And that's how it's been done.
Just one more question. What I'm trying to find out is not the money you're talking about that's taken pursuant to statute, which is a result of traffic fines or something of that nature. But I'm interested in knowing what money is and who's getting it on the administrative process.
Oh, I understand. Madam Chair, Senator Foley, those are held mainly at the local level through the local jurisdiction, perhaps the county, and certainly the municipal court.
Well, Madam Chair, the court administration isn't getting any money from these people for administrative costs, and that's we don't know how many cities or counties are using that, nor what's going on. Other than there's a trend that apparently is a rapidly growing amount of people moving from the regular traffic procedures and sending it through an administrative agency.
And Madam Chair, we simply don't know that. That's one of those unknowns. If agencies are doing this, it is very likely we would have no knowledge of that, nor would we have reason to have knowledge of that, if they've chosen to do the administrative citations.
Madam Chair, I think that the only ultimate conclusion here is that if we continue to allow the use of administrative procedures, is to eliminate the funds that we're getting from the regular traffic tickets and look for another source of revenue for the post board.
Well, or there's a couple of other options, I think, Senator Foley. One of them would be get rid of a $73 surcharge on a $40 ticket. I think the things that we did back when to solve a budget problem have left us stewing in our own juices here if this is actually happening the way you think it is happening.
I agree with what you're saying, Madam Chair. I know that that we in our zeal to collect fees on everything instead of raising taxes created this. And to how we get out of that, yes, we can take those funds, those fees, and switch them around, as you've suggested. But on the other hand, then you're going to have to backfill with that from somewhere else. So that likely means a withdrawal from the general revenue fund.
Well, Senator Foley, if I understand it correctly, and I'll be darned if I understand some things around here, but our law says that we collect the funds, and up to 39% of it can go to the post board and then go out to the local units of government for reimbursement for training costs. But we're only up to about 20 or 25% of that actual amount, and we limit it by the amount that we actually put in the base budget. So there is a lot of that money that's being collected that goes to the general fund.
Sure.
When, you know, it seems like their funding has been fairly flat, and we've kind of done this, you know, putting everything in the general fund instead. Mr. Turner, do you have some information for us?
Madam Chair, members, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, if you were to get 39%, full 39% of the first $25 of the $73 surcharge, you would need another $2.4 million a year. Is that correct?
That is correct.
For full funding.
To the 39%, yes.
Yep.
And then that would help out Senator Engelbretson's problem of the local units not getting but a small percentage of what they actually pay in training costs. Yeah.
The issue here is, one, money. We've talked about that. The other thing is the absence of reporting of the violation to the state of Minnesota or the Department of Public Safety. So if you are driving in North Minneapolis, and Minneapolis has an administrative court system, you're stopped by a highway patrol officer, you will go into the current procedure and pay $192 for a stop sign or
a $40 violation.
And if the city is doing the stopping, as a city that would have an administrative procedures, they would pay at a reduced rate, and there would have nothing going on their driver record. And that is the gross unfairness to that it seems to me that we either have to decide whether we're going to do administrative costs or do the traffic and the things in the court system the way they currently are. The thing that you talk about is you getting or reducing the fees. I think that's a wonderful idea, but I'd hate to see the cost of that.
Only the budget. I asked my police chief whether Minneapolis does do the administrative citations, and for traffic things, we don't.
No.
Not my big city. We have administrative citations for inspections, things, and whatever, but not for police-related things. So I don't know who is doing this. It must be smaller entities. Senator Moi.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if it's appropriate for us to look at it this year, and if we choose to, I'd like to do that. But on more than one occasion, even from members, you know, there's been some concerns raised about the number, not just the surcharges on the tickets, but court filing fees and court filing surcharges. I mean, over the last, I don't know, several bienniums, I think there's been tremendous pressure in the public safety committee to try to find resources to fund some of the really good things that we did, you know. And I think that at some point we should really take a look at that. And, you know, even if we end up not having the money to do anything about it, I think that we need to track. Because for the citations and surcharges, it's a whole different arena for discussion. But I honestly have some real concerns about the court filing fees, and at some point it becomes so cost prohibitive that we're in excess. In actuality, we're creating a disincentive for people to going into court, which we're kind of guaranteeing to them as, you know, their constitutional rights as citizens that they would have access. And yet we are imposing so many fees on them that it's becoming increasingly a disincentive for people to want to go to court. And I don't know, there's just something fundamentally wrong about that. And I mean, I know there's the money issues, but at some point I think we need to keep track of that, and we should talk about that.
I think that's a good idea. I'm going to ask Mr. Turner to come up with some information on how much is being collected for all of those various things as best he can, so that we have an idea how much that actually is. People tell me that it's bad enough when you lose your driver's license, but when you go to get it reinstated, it's several hundred dollars now in fees to get it reinstated. So why bother, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Senator Berglund.
Madam Chair, just to your last comment, it was done to pay for the DUI bill that we passed, the felony bill. And, of course, we never collected all of that, so it never really paid for it anyway. But that was the reason it was, quote, unquote, imposed onto the law. What I wanted to say about the court filing fees is that, the law does allow it to be waived for people that, want to file as a low-income person. But what I hear is that it's still a problem because you can't get the court to waive it if you haven't gone into court. And so either the attorney that's filing for you has to require you to give him the money or he has to put the money up himself to get you into court so the court can actually determine if you meet the criteria to have the fee waived. So...
We do complicate things in life, don't we?
Madam Chair.
Senator Foley.
And Senator Neville may be better able to lay this out, but when you're looking at informa pauperis, which provides for elimination of the poor, so an individual that is indigent or considered indigent under the existing law would not have to pay on the filing fees. It's the average person that does that,
right. But if you're being charged with something, or you want to file for divorce, or whatever it is, it's taken you into court. But it's the court that determines if you meet that criteria. And in order to get into court, you have to pay that fee to start with, and so. You don't get a court date scheduled anymore unless you file that fee along with the paperwork. And so it might have seemed like we were making it so those folks didn't have to pay. They still have to figure out how to come up with the money. And, I've heard this complaint from attorneys that represent these people that, the person doesn't have the money and, so then they have to put it up themselves for their client. At least until the court hearing is held and the court determines that they don't have to pay it, and then the fee is returned. But,
yeah, Chair, I don't think that there's a hearing that's needed. I mean, the routine, I think, is somebody might have to help them fill the affidavit out, but then they either send it in with the papers when they're filing it, or they can just go to the courthouse and the court administrator will usually help them fill it out. But there's no hearing. They'll fill the papers out and a judge will sign off on it, and then there's no filing fee. But I don't believe that
it isn't working that way everywhere.
There may not be uniformity throughout.
I've heard this from attorneys that it's really kind of an attorney. For a low-income person, it's really kind of an attorney fee.
Yeah. Well, the judges, I think, do have to sign off on it, but I didn't think they required hearings for it.
In Minneapolis... Yeah. The fact is that the court has established ombudsman type of thing that provides free legal advice as far as how they can process those, and they get quite a staff over there in Minneapolis to handle that. You don't do that in other areas of the state, and I agree that the court costs are far too high. The thing is that we look at something and say, well, we want the law library. So years ago, we set up so that the county law libraries were funded by a surcharge on the case. And then we added something else. Now when you get a DWI, you just are subject to a horrendous... cost of which in many cases drive the drivers so they don't get any. They can't afford the insurance, and so why buy a license and so on.
Okay. Well, we've wandered a bit far afield from the post board. Any other questions for the post board?
All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Judge Gomez, Sentencing Guidelines Commission. I think Sarah's got to set up the computer for the next presentation.
Madam Chair, maybe Mr. Turner would also include in his looking into this. I know there's some departments out there that are actually they have a school diversion plan for minor traffic violations where there's no fine or no fee or anything at all going on. So you have it all kind of all over the place out there. And I know the department that does that. So if you want that information, I can give that to you.
All right. We're not going on tour this Friday, but on the 16th, we're going to Shakopee Women's Prison. I hope you all have that on your calendar. And then the last tour we have set up is down to Red Wing on the 23rd. And they will be having a graduation ceremony while we're there. And I think that's why we picked that date. We've asked Senator Murphy to speak as the speaker for the graduation ceremony. So I'm hoping that we'll have a nice turnout from our committee going. So, are we all set, Sarah? Did the people who were at the hearing last night, did you find it useful? Good information?
Absolutely.
Madam Chair.
Senator Moore.
I live in St. Paul, and I thought I knew Minneapolis, but I was quite shocked when Mayor Ryback talked about Chief Harrington talked about meth being an issue here in St. Paul, and when Mayor Ryback said that that's not the issue in Minneapolis. I found that shocking contrast. It's interesting if that, you know, I mean, I'm not going to doubt their fact, but I just, that's really interesting that two cities that are basically
side by side
could each have such dramatically different issues.
Yeah, I was really struck by that, too. And I know that meth has been slow to coming to the big cities, and it's here in big numbers in St. Paul, according to the chief. Mm-hmm. I was kind of surprised at that. But I also noticed that Chief Dolan didn't dispute that comment from the mayor that it's still marijuana is the big drug of choice in Minneapolis. I was kind of surprised. Senator Wilson?
Madam Chair, I just can't help but... remember, I believe it was last year when you were in front of one of the committees, Senator Dal Sam's committee, testifying for a youth group.
Mm-hmm. My summer jobs.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I believe I asked that question about what is the drug of choice in the African-American community. And, of course, it was crack cocaine and, you know, pot, marijuana. But meth is coming into the neighborhood, and that's what they said. So it was kind of interesting, but the whole emphasis should be on all drugs and not just one particular drug.
Well, it looks like the computer's ready to go.
It is.
All right, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm Isabel Gomez. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Sentencing Guidelines Commission, and I'm here this afternoon. Well, collectively, there are three of us, and that's half of all of the commission staff. To my right is Jill Payne, who's one of our senior specialist researchers, and Ann Wall, who a lot of you know, who is our very special senior researcher. And they're here in case there are historical questions since I joined the agency less than a year ago. Because you graciously gave us the opportunity to do the overview, this presentation will be very simple. The rationale for our entire budget, really, is restoration to 2000-2001 biennium capacity and maintenance at the Commission's historical level. You have before you I think it's a five- or six-page excerpt from the governor's budget along with an agency profile. And the governor's recommendation is very close to what the commission requested. We are living with the governor's recommendation, and I'll make a little note about that, about the difference. Our total request is for $600,000 a year. That would be an increase of $137,000 a year over our present base budget. And so for the biennium, we're looking at a total of $274,000. As I, the governor's recommendation also specifically recognizes what our needs are. There's a reference to, quote, maintaining existing functions, unquote, and return to the level of the 2000-2001 biennium. We have a slide here which shows you what happened to our budget. And against the, and so we have 2000 through 2005. We stopped at 2005 because that's where our offender data stops. And this budget, or this slide, shows you a kind of easy indicator of where we are. You can see the cut in the budget 2004, while the number of offenders, felons sentenced, it continues to increase. And the reason that is an indicator of our plight is that every one of those offenders becomes the locus for data that we have to gather and clean and analyze. And so if the number of offenders goes up, the raw work that we have to do goes up. I think we could all agree that there's no reason to think that in the near future we're going to have a declining number of convictions. We may have a declining number of prison admits, but the number of people convicted probably will continue to rise. Now, this budget is, or this request is, oh, and I guess there's one more budget, one more slide that shows you the same information in table form, because some people are more comfortable with that than the graph form. It's basically the same thing. The two bottom boxes still say $463,000, because that's been our base budget and continues to be. If we stay at this present base budget of $463,000, we cannot fund our present 5.75 FTE in the next biennium. I tried to cram our salaries into the budget, the base budget for the next biennium, by decreasing the director's position to 0.75 and therefore having a total decreased FTE of 5.5. That would be a very, very bad idea, but even if we were to do it, we can't quite fund those salaries on this base budget. In 2008, we'd be kind of close, I think, at 99.1%. In 2009, we'd only hit 96% of what we need. Our entire request is for salaries, and it comes in two pieces. The major part is $247,000 over the entire biennium to maintain or to restore our historic level of staffing. At present, we have 5.75 FTE, and what we would do if we were to get this money is, first of all, fully fund our present 5.75 so that nobody would be laid off. Secondly, we would hire two additional people. That would take us to the level of staffing that we had in 2000-2001 when we did have fewer cases than we do now. But realistically, we believe that we can do our essential core work with that kind of staffing. We'd probably add two researchers at a lower level researchers. We would also raise the salary of one of our present staffers. We have one intermediate researcher who persists in working above grade. She's really doing senior research work that is both illegal and unethical. That is, she needs to be paid for what she's doing. And I guess the choices would be to give us the money to pay her properly, or I would have to figure out some way to disable her so that she doesn't do such good work, which, and really, I mean, it's silly to say that, but that really is where we are. We have always had huge, or at least currently we have, enormous good fortune in a staff that is truly a dream. We have no receptionist. We have no administrative assistant. We all answer our own phones. We do our own copying. We walk to the file cabinet on occasion. On projects like the report to the legislature, we all pitch in until the matter is printed and bound and delivered. And that's because we really cannot afford any staff member who does not substantially contribute to a rather complicated daily work and who is not fully involved in carrying out our mission. Now, it might seem to some that this request is overly modest. Maybe it's a folly to ask for what we really need and not what we'd love to have. And frankly, I've taken this approach because I respect your responsibility. We come here begging, and what we're conscious of is your power. But I suspect that what you're conscious of is your responsibility to spend the people's money wisely. And I want to maintain credibility with you, and I wanted to be just flat on about what we really need. At present, the Commission's integrity is truly threatened by the present level of funding. The Commission has stayed afloat on carry-forward funds that are not, I mean, they have done things like buy paper. We can use them to buy paper. I have used them and other supplies. I have used them for consulting, to hire a consultant, and that was a very valuable investment because it increased our research capacity for a while, actually. And I have used some for temp workers, but we can't use temp workers very effectively in our agency. If you look at the total request, as the governor recommends, it's at about 27 an increase of 27% or something like that, which sounds huge. It's really less because we have been spending more than $463,000. It's just that we haven't been able to put the money where we really needed it. And it's, as you will well understand, a very wasteful way to do funding. I said in the agency overview that if the state were to make a modest investment in research, in mining, you would get a big return, but it would be irresponsible for me to come in here with requests for ambitious new research ventures. I'm here for a request that will stabilize our foundation and keep the basic structure at its historical level so that when you have questions, we can answer them. When you need a piece of research based on our data, we can do it, and we will do it at the high level that consumers have come to expect from the Commission. Now, there's one last slide, and this one compares our budget with the budgets of similar commissions in other states. These were pretty much all of the commissions we were able to get information on. You can see Minnesota there, the green bar, and the ones that budgets that really are relevant, most relevant, to us are those that are shown in pink. Those are Virginia, Washington, Kansas, and North Carolina. And the reason I say that those are the ones that are really comparable is because those commissions are all children of the Minnesota Commission, if you will. And they operate, they have a lot of similar mission to ours. And so you can see that, or I will point out, that if we get our full request, which I trust we will, pray we will vault over Alabama. You know, that's how far we're going to get. We will leap over the next bar to our left. So Minnesota is still going to be getting major bang for its buck. I am a Minnesotan. I know our tradition of lean government, and so I'm not saying that we ought to somehow fund ourselves in the way, or fund the commission the way that North Carolina does, or Virginia does, or Washington does, or Kansas does. If you wanted to, we would be thrilled. But as I say, I want to talk about what our real, true, essential needs are. You've heard a lot this afternoon about the 2% thing. Part of our request also is that is, I think it's 18,000. Part of the total is for that supplement. Because, as was pointed out earlier, salaries, of course, do go up over time. The difference between our proposal and the governor's recommendation was that we funded that, or we calculated that increase at, I think, 3.5%, but either that or 3.25, because we thought it was more realistic and likelier, close to the truth. We need that 2%. and so we really request that you grant us the full $274,000. And, Madam Chair and Senators, if there are questions, I would try to answer those.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Judge Gomez? Senator,
Madam Chair and Judge, your base for 07 is 463. Your spending is 570. Was that extra 107 just one-time funding for general operations, or did you do some special project? Or
we didn't. If we had a budget in 2006, and we have it again at about $570,000, we didn't spend that much because it's hard to spend it effectively. So we still have a chunk of that carryover money, and what we have used part of it for people, as I've indicated. We have used part of it to convert records to electronic form, and we're anticipating using a chunk to upgrade our server and hardware and to increase the speed with which we can crunch numbers so that we get, for example, right now we're working on 2005 data. And there are a lot of reasons for that, some of which we can fix and some of which we can't. But we can certainly speed that up so that the data we're analyzing is closer to the time that we're speaking or using the data. I'm not sure that that was responsive, Senator Neville.
Well, so that extra, when was that extra 107 appropriated? Was that, you say you have carryover authority?
It was appropriated, I believe, in for the 2004-05.
Okay.
So we've had it since 2004, and we've been bringing along, and so we still have a little bit of it. I wasn't going to admit that, lest somehow it disappear.
Okay. So your agency has carryover, general carryover authority? It doesn't expire?
We have been, that was a given, that authorization was given to
okay.
the agency.
And Madam Chair, the other question, I haven't reviewed, you know, every year we get the sentencing guideline book.
Yep.
And any changes you're recommending go into effect if we don't prevent them. I think that's still a law.
It is.
I haven't read the book. And maybe this isn't the best time to ask the question, but are there any significant changes
there are
that you're
not.
Recommending this year?
There are not. Excuse
okay.
me. I didn't mean to
no, that's
cut
okay.
you off,
yeah.
Senator Neville, Madam Chair. We are about to publish a revised version, an updated version of our 2004 drug report, because we had had sort of informal interest from legislators about thoughts we might have about changes there. But I guess I don't want to spoil the surprise too much.
Are you going to be reporting? Are you going to have another hearing on those changes? Or
no, we're not.
Is it just up to
we
us
are not
to look at the report.
Yeah, I'm sorry. We are not recommending any changes to the legislature this year. We are, to the extent that legislator. I mean, there are a few technical changes, but to the extent that legislators are interested in changes that could be made in our drug laws to reduce prison beds this session, we had a couple of ideas about that. But the commission is really conscious of issues of comity concerning that drug area. It is really for elected officials to decide whether you want changes, how many, you know, where you want to be with that. The commission is very conscious of that. And so we offered a couple of thoughts in that spirit.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director, I just couldn't help but notice that you had the chairman of the Sentencing Guidelines Commission on the agenda today, and I know those sheriffs have a tendency of becoming busy and not showing up in meetings, but tell him we miss him, his testimony here today.
Well, the sheriff feels really strongly. We should say Sheriff Stephen Borchard is our chair. He is a gem. I've gone on bended knee to the governor to make sure we keep him. And he was quite ready to come right up here this afternoon. And given the road conditions, he had no other meetings in the Capitol. And this relative simplicity of our presentation, I let him off the hook. So.
Thank you. Thank you. Follow up on that. And your request, I just really must appreciate the way you presented your request, saying this is what I need. I'm not here asking for more, knowing that in government that's kind of how we've done it over the years, is we know somebody coming in asking for a request. At least my experience has been that. And I approached that when I was in charge of a $5 million budget. I came in and asked for what I wanted, not to shoot, you know, one-third higher, knowing I'm going to get the bottom line. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I know the good work that you do because I've sat on the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. So thanks.
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, thank you for that, because I have had some second thoughts about whether, you know, I should have overridden my principles. I'm glad I didn't. Thank you.
Yeah. Senator Moore.
Well, Madam Chair, I was going to say, as I was listening, I was going to cry. And then I was ready to move just this agenda item onto the floor. It was very nicely done. Thank you very much for the
Thank you, Senator Moore, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And thank you to your two other staff folks who came to help today. Okay,
Madam Chair.
Senator Neville.
Maybe one last thing. I don't know that this is going to be one of those sessions where we have lots of criminal justice things that seem to be requiring bed impact. So we're saving you some money by asking for fewer fiscal notes, I think, too.
You know,
how
so
about that?
Well, Ms. Wall is the expert on that, but so far I think you're right.
Yeah,
it seems to me we had
sense,
more
right?
last year at this time, and that wasn't a policy year.
Yeah.
Well, Madam Chair, if we're saving the state money, I take full credit.
And if we're saving the state money, we'll spend it somehow, right?
Yeah.
Some other different way. Okay, the last item for the day is the Private Detective Board. Director Marie Ullman. Go ahead and start whenever you're ready.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Marie Ullman. I'm the Executive Director of the Private Detective and Protective Agent Services Board. And joining me at the table this afternoon is Dan Boytum, who you already met during the course of testimony for the Post Board. He also serves as our financial connection and assists us with those matters. And so he'll be assistance as well, I hope. I would like to, first of all, extend thanks to Madam Chair and the committee. I was not able to originally attend to do my agency overview when it was originally thought it could be scheduled due to a very meaningful trip I had the opportunity to take to India. So I appreciate the opportunity to delay that that information till today and look forward to sharing that information with you as well. For the benefit of new members of the committee and to the body itself, I'd like to provide a brief overview of the activities of our agency. The board is a fee-driven organization with fees that are being deposited into the general fund from which the board receives an appropriation. We have five board members. We have a law enforcement representative, two public citizen members, as well as one of each of the areas that we license. So we have one licensed protective agent and one licensed private detective as well. The board's duties are to review and issue licenses for security investigative services in Minnesota, ensure compliance with licensing, including mandatory training, handle complaints, and ensure compliance with mandatory training. There are over 400 license holders in the private investigative and security services area, as well as 75 approved training providers. Some of the services that members of the public can see these license holders operating in are uniform guard and patrol functions, armored car services, event security, executive protection, corporate investigations, pre-employment and employment investigations, as well as insurance fraud investigations. Many of these services have become increasingly visible to the public, such areas as shopping mall security, business office complexes, airports, government buildings, and nuclear power plants. They are engaging in providing services that affect issues such as fraud and theft and its impact on our economy. It's estimated that in Minnesota there are approximately 7,000 people that are employed as employees of these licensed agencies. These services provide key augmentation to public law enforcement efforts. That augmentation is validated when you see organizations like the International Association of Chiefs of Police prompt their membership to support measures of regulation of these industries and improvements. It's encouraging on a local level to see law enforcement's part to seek to expand their knowledge of these services and how they can be used effectively to support public safety endeavors. There is an increased ratio of private security personnel to public law enforcement, and that ratio is currently about 3-1. That ratio in other countries is experienced as well, in fact, to a much larger degree than in the United States and Canada. For example, in Russia, it's about 10-1. I also have an adjunct role as the president of the International Association of Security Investigative Regulators, which is an association of my regulatory colleagues in the U.S. and Canada. And through that capacity, I receive information concerning many of the world's nations that are involved in the process of regulating these services. Some of these countries include the United Arab Emirates, India, and most recently, Mexico has identified a need to organize and regulate private security. Programs of regulation in the U.S. and Canada have served as models to these governments as they identify these services as important areas to public law, to the public and law enforcement. The sustained growth of these businesses has brought about a reliance by the public for these services. Issues of assumed authority, abuse of authority, use of force, and other issues that relate to how they carry out those functions in our communities. These are concerns that are shared by the industry, and they do seek to have a more positive relationship with both the public and public law enforcement to help in those efforts. This concludes the overview of our agency, and I believe you have documentation concerning our budget request, and I would be happy to respond to any questions that you might have about that proposal.
Would you just walk us through the budget pages?
Certainly.
They don't look terribly complicated.
Okay. The first page and roughly a quarter are basically our agency profile, and many of the comments that I just made in terms of some statistics about our agency, how many people we license and so on, are included in that document. Our core functions, operations. The agency overview in terms of our appropriation request is, I see, page number 4, if that coincides with what your folks are looking at, which provides what our current budget is for 06 and 07 and the governor's recommendation in the next biennium for $128,000 in 2008 and $130,000 in 2009. That also breaks down the expenditures that we have had in the current biennium and then projects out what we will see in the next. And our compensation area is highlighted there, as well as our expenditures.
Are we doing a 2% compensation increase for this agency like the others we have in this division?
Madam Chair, that would be correct.
Okay.
The following page is in reference to the, in fact, the next successive couple of pages have to do with that compensation adjustment request.
Okay, questions? Senator Neville.
Madam Chair, perhaps I should know this, but do you license only individuals or do you license agencies who could have people who are unlicensed working for them?
Director Ullman.
Madam Chair, Senator Neville, we actually license the entity that provides the service, but our statute provides certain provisions that direct that license holder to conduct certain steps that many states who do individually register or license employees do, such as a BCA and FBI record check, mandatory training, issuance of statute-described identification.
So, Madam Chair, Senator, so we could have a lot of people doing private investigation who are not personally licensed, but they work for a licensed agency. Is that the way it works?
Director Ullman.
Madam Chair, Senator Neville, that is correct.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Senator Moore.
Ms. Ullman, I see here that it says that the board is funded fully with fees, or you're fee funded. So how do you determine what your budget is, and then that determines what your fee structure? Or how does that work?
Madam Chair, Senator Mao, we are a fee-driven agency. Our fees are directly deposited into the general fund from which we receive an appropriation, and there is a state statute basically that addresses that the fees that we can collect cannot significantly over or under undercut that prescribed appropriation request for operational activity.
So, Madam Chair, Ms. Ullman, the amount that you are requesting in this in this biennium, that falls within the amount of fees that you're projecting to be collecting. And do you collect the fees and then deposit it, and then you get it out in the next year? So do you spend ahead of time, or are you spending this year last year's fees that were collected? How does that work?
Director Ullman.
Madam Chair, Senator Mount, would you?
Mr. Boyden.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Senator Moyle, I'm Dan Boyden with the Department of Public Safety. We also provide the support services for the Private Detective Board. The fees for Private Detective Board and Protective Agents licenses get deposited directly into the general fund as a non-dedicated fund. Non-dedicated receipt. What the legislature does is then appropriate funds to the Private Detective Board for the operations, for their operations. And their fees do, and it's shown on page 7, their fees do cover the base budget as well as the compensation adjustment that's requested, that the governor requested.
Madam Chair, Ms. Boyton, and then if there's any extra that comes in because it's directed into the general fund, let's say if they collect a little bit above what they're requesting, that's just slush in the general fund?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Boydham.
Senator Moore, I wouldn't term it slush, but it does get deposited into the general fund. Yes.
Thank you. Half of it goes to education.
No, I was going to say healthcare.
Healthcare.
But she's not here.
Yes. Senator Ingebretson.
Madam Chair, just one question, Director. Just the training, the ongoing training. Just I probably should know this too, but what requirements are there of individual training?
Ms. Boydham. Let's try that again. Ms. Ullman.
Answer to pretty much anything. Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, what we require is something that's called pre-assignment training, and pre-assignment training is kind of right out of the starting gate. It's 12 hours of prescribed topics that were determined to be important to those entering the field. And then there is a responsibility for those folks to also undergo 6 hours of annual continuing training to refresh those skills or perhaps something of a focus nature that their company is involved in providing services for. And then should a company choose to arm their personnel with anything from handcuffs to a firearm, they also have a further requirement of initial armed training, which, again, we dictate certain content factors. And then they, too, must have an additional 6 hours of continuing armed training as well.
Senator Neville.
Madam Chair, what is the fee for a license now?
Madam Chair, Senator Neville, we have a graduated scale, so we have new license fees. An individual, for instance, sole proprietor would be applying for a license. They would pay a fee of $1,000.
Per year?
No, that is an initial license fee, and it's in, if a license is issued, it's valid for a two-year period. And the reissuance fees are based on the number of employees that a licensee either has or does not. We start with zero, and we go up from there with a progressive fee structure. And I would be happy to relay those particulars to you and other members of the committee.
Okay. Well, let me just clarify. It's $1,000 for 2 years when you first get your license. What is it when you renew then?
Madam Chair, Senator Neville, for instance, an individual private detective who has no employees is going to pay $540 every 2 years.
Okay. That's pretty healthy then.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Members, next Monday, we're going to tackle two of the big items in the governor's proposal, CrimNet and Armor. He's proposed 800 megahertz. He's proposed very large increases in those, and we thought that it would do us well to spend a day getting information about that and taking testimony from people who want to give us their 2 cents worth.
Madam Chair, are we going to have some sheriffs, local sheriffs? I mean, is that appropriate place
if
for them to
If they want
come
to come in, or? You bet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, is there anybody, do you have anybody coming? Or?
Do we have anybody signed up yet from the sheriffs?
I don't believe so. I've gotten a couple testifiers, but if they are interested, they can just give me a call.
And maybe even a representative from the association
right.
would be good.
Right, yeah. And a representative from their group was in talking to us today, so I know who to call to ask. So. All right. All right, anything else? We're adjourned. Thank you all very much.